All right. Lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. It's Tuesday. Get crunch time rolling. Columnist from the Register Guard. Multiple ways to catch his work from the sports section of the paper. RegisterGuard.com, DuckSports.com. On Twitter, it's at AustinMeekRG. Austin, a happy Tuesday to you. How are things?
Hey, Steve. I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Awesome. By the way, you know, when we have a guest on, it's usually, so you're going to be on this time, we're going to talk about this, and here you are, the local columnist, I get the paper delivered, and I totally forgot to mention, oh, he wrote something today, so...
Must have been a very memorable column.
No, I hadn't looked at the paper, so the worst thing I do sometimes is be me and get into show mode and ignore everything that's happening, so you... Talk about your Little League, I'm air quoting, career, and first of all, you guys got to check out some of what he wrote today about your church league softball, and you were able to say, contingent on the denomination, they view the game differently.
Yeah, you know, maybe this is just a Kansas thing. I don't know if there was any equivalent to this in New Jersey, Steve, but certainly, you know, it can get a little bit heated between, like, the Methodists and the Lutherans and the Baptists. Where I grew up, you know, that they take that stuff pretty seriously. You know, it's kind of like a college football rivalry. You know, maybe you're part of the same conference, but you wear a different color, so you gotta protect your home team, I guess is how it works.
In New Jersey, it was basically nationalistic, the Italians against the Irish, and it was very loud.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
That's the best way to put it without getting in trouble. So I caught it on your Twitter feed a couple weeks back, and it resurfaced this week, and I'm a subscriber now. What could you tell us about the newsletter? How often are you putting it out, and what's the content?
Yeah, I saw you subscribe for that today. I think you are lucky number 13.
Woo-hoo!
Of my subscribers. So you definitely got in on the ground floor of that, and I thank you for subscribing. You know, this was something I totally, you know, it was just a total wild idea that I decided to try. Like, hey, what would happen if I started doing a newsletter that was basically devoted to anything but sports? I spend a lot of time writing about sports and talking about sports, and I love sports. I'm passionate about it. It's my job, but it's also something that I really enjoy. So in no means am I sick of sports, but, you know, it's nice to be a well-rounded person, and we all have interests outside of sports. So I thought, what would happen if I started doing this newsletter, which is basically writing about anything but sports? I think I've sent out two or three of them now, and I've got another one that I'm working on. A lot of it's probably going to end up being about parenting because I have two kids at home, and between your job and parenting, there's not much room for much else. So it may end up being a parenting newsletter, who knows, but I kind of like having the freedom to stretch the legs a little bit and write about something other than sports.
Well, I'm going to be telling people that I got in on the Meek IPO back in June of 19 at $8 a share. So,
so I'll have to find a way to reward you, you three loyal or 13 loyal subscribers. When that newsletter hits like 5,000 or something, you'll get a special prize in the mail.
All right, I'll be looking for it. So, last Thursday, the NBA draft, there were a trio of Ducks that could have heard their names called. Two didn't. The other, Bol Bol, who I think 8 months ago was going to be a lottery pick, went 44th. So let's begin there. Even though some were skeptical about how his game would transfer, what was your reaction to where he went? Because that seemed like a heck of a tumble.
Yeah, I was surprised. I think I said on your show last week that I thought some team was going to fall in love with the potential and draft him in the first round, and that didn't happen. I think that, you know, I think that there's kind of probably some groupthink that happens in the NBA, you know, where once a couple teams pass on a guy, then maybe the other teams look at it and say, oh, well, you know, they passed on this guy. There must be something going on there. And, you know, sometimes that's how you see a guy fall as far as Bull fell. I just kept every pick that came up there, I just kept thinking, okay, well, he's got to go here. but he just kept waiting and waiting and waiting. I think ultimately, you know, he ended up in a pretty good situation. You know, Denver is a place where he could potentially go in there and do kind of like Michael Porter did this year for the Nuggets, where coming off an injury, you just take a year and basically redshirt and get healthy. It's an organization that, you know, was in the playoffs. I don't think it's a bad fit for him. And, you know, if he ends up having a great career, nobody's going to remember what happened on draft night. But certainly for a guy who, you know, at one point in time was viewed as being a potential top 10 pick, that's a pretty drastic fall.
As far as Lewis King, I actually like his game better to become a more legit NBA player. But, you know, so his not only going not late in round one or early round two, not getting drafted at all. I mean, were you surprised by that and his now having to lean on getting a shot via an undrafted free agent?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that you notice with the draft is when you listen to the players talk about where they think they're going to get drafted, if all of that actually happened, you would need like a 5-round draft for everybody, because there's a lot of guys who think that they're going to go, you know, in the late first round or the early second round, and there's just not enough picks for all of those guys, and Lewis King was one of them. You know, clearly he got some advice from somebody who told him, hey, you're going to be a first-round pick, or you're going to be a second-round pick. And it didn't happen. You know, he was one of those guys that was left waiting. You know, the injury situation was probably part of it with him, too. You know, he had the knee injury that slowed him down early in his freshman season. I like his game. I think he could be a guy who sticks in the NBA. I don't know if he'll ever be a star in the NBA or a guy who averages, you know, 15 points a game in the NBA, but I can see him being a rotation player because he's got good length. He can shoot the ball. He's pretty athletic. I think he could develop into being a pretty good defender. So he's going to be on a two-way contract with the Pistons. You know, no guarantees with that. He's going to have to show something and show something pretty soon if he's going to actually stick in the NBA. But I do think that he has the skills to be able to hang around the league for a while.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Last Sunday, as we continue with Austin Meeker, the Register guard, you wrote about half of the dozen Pac-12 players eligible didn't get picked, another 36 or so around the country. As it stands, so they're done with college, and they have to hope they either get a G League shot or play in another country. I thought you brought up an interesting point. Is it time? How logical is it to, if you don't get drafted and you could give back whatever money you took or you didn't take any money, how fair do you think it is to just hit rewind and allow these guys to return to college ball?
Well, Steve, you and I are pretty hard on the NCAA on this show. I think we've had plenty of things to criticize the NCAA about over the years. So I'll give the NCAA credit for getting one right. Because a year ago, they changed the rules to where if a player enters his name in the draft, an underclassman, and doesn't get drafted, he can come back to school as long as he notifies the school by the Monday after the draft. I think that's a great rule. And the reason that it's not in place right now is because the NBA and the NBA Players Association, they have to approve that change to the draft. So players would be eligible to basically enter the draft once, go back to school, and then enter the draft again. But I don't see any downside to that. I don't see any reason why the NBA shouldn't say tomorrow that they're going to approve that change. It seems fair to the players. You know, it seems fair to a guy like Kenny Wooten, who, when he decided to stay in the draft, I don't think anybody thought he was going to get drafted. I didn't see him on anybody's mock draft. And, he's a talented player, and I think he could have a good pro career. I think he is a guy who would have been well-served to come back for another year of college. develop his game, get stronger, get tougher. I think he's a guy who could eventually have been drafted, but he just wasn't ready for that right now. I don't know if you gave him the choice today if he would come back to Oregon.
Right.
He's going to play for the Knicks in the summer league. Sounds like he's going to go to their training camp. Maybe he'll play really well and get a spot on their roster. I don't know. But if you gave him the option today, I think he would at least have to think about, is it the right thing to do to come back and play another year of college basketball?
One other thing I wanted to hit on, it's kind of a developing story. California moving ahead with legislation that's centered on amateurism reform. Starting in 2023, athletes would, in essence, be able to make money off their name or likeness. You know, you think of the O'Bannon litigation. Then the NCAA says, well, we consider banning schools from championship participation. It's kind of a lot to absorb, but and it's early. What do you make of all this?
Well, Steve, mark the tape. Yeah, I said my nice thing about the NCAA. If anybody comes and says, you never say anything nice about the NCAA, I did say something nice on the show about them.
Okay, we're
so
in.
Now I'm going to say... this is a case where they just need to give up the fight because the momentum is clearly moving toward players being able to be compensated for their names and likenesses. And rather than digging in and fighting this with litigation, I think the NCAA needs to think about, okay, how do we get on the right side of history here? And that's not something that you really associate with the NCAA. They always seem to be the organization that is fighting against change and trying to maintain the status quo and fighting against anything that would upset the order that has existed for so long. But clearly, it's going to happen. You know, whether it happens in California or it happens nationally, or whether it happens with a big drawn-out fight with the NCAA, or whether the NCAA, you know, realizes that it's inevitable, somehow it's going to happen that players are going to start to be able to profit more from their abilities and share more in these tremendous revenues that are being generated by college sports. So the real question is the NCAA going to dig in and fight it, or are they going to adapt? And if you know the NCAA, I think you can guess which one it's going to be.
I'm going with A. Let's wrap with this. He's been on the job for a season and a game. Folks are absolutely around here buzzing over 2019. Recruiting seems to have hit unprecedented levels. And Mario Cristobal got a nice raise and extension. I think the numbers are through the end of his contract in 2024, he'll pocket another $4 million. The buyout would be huge to leave. You think this is more about stability and wanting to keep him here, more so than a raise based on merit so far?
Well, I think it's about the fact that Miami, his alma mater, had a coaching vacancy, and Mario Cristobal's name was mentioned prominently for that job. Now, whether he was really on the short list, I think it's hard to say. But any time as a coach your name gets out there on a job, there's a pretty good chance that you're going to get some money out of it. And so that's what happened with Mario Cristobal, I think. And you're right, you know, the reason that Oregon was willing to make that commitment to him is because they feel like, you know, this thing is going in a positive direction. Even with that Miami opening, if Oregon wasn't excited about what Mario Cristobal was doing, I don't think that they would have given him that contract extension after just 1 year. But you look at all the things that you mentioned, the recruiting class, the buzz around the team going into this year potentially as a top 10, top 15 program. All of those things are reasons for optimism with Mario Cristobal. You know, it's not like they went out and signed him to a 10-year contract after winning 9 games. You know, that wasn't what happened. It's a small extension and, you know, basically an acknowledgement that, hey, you know, you had an opportunity potentially to go somewhere else. You decided to stay. We'll kick you a little bit more money. But, you know, I think after 1 year, you've got to feel pretty positive about the direction that things are going with Mario Cristobal. As good as, you know, as good as anybody's felt about Oregon football since probably Marcus Mariota was here.
No, I agree. Sitting here, I'm hearing lots and lots and lots of buzz and positives, and folks are stoked for the season. Folks, he is Austin Meek of the Register Guard. You can catch his act in the paper online, registerguard.com or ducksports.com on Twitter. Hit him up at Austin Meek RG. Austin, always my pleasure. Good chatting. Have a good one. We'll chat soon.
All right. Thanks, Steve. I appreciate it.
All right. Have a good one.